Make the right call for the right Medicare Advantage benefits. Go to MedMutual.com/review to schedule your free Medicare plan review with Medical Mutual, Ohio's hometown Medicare insurer.
Through the Griffin Tour is back, and this time we are heading to the West Coast. Join Jay and I as we record brand new episodes of the show live in person with you guys, plus a special in-person Jay versus Ben with questions asked by... This September, we will be heading to Seattle, Portland, Sacramento, Berkeley, San Diego, and Los Angeles. Seattle and San Diego were both sold out, but we've just added matinee shows to both locations. So if you missed out on the first pass, or if you want to join us for a doubleheader, we will have two unique shows in the same day. For us, there is nothing more fun than getting to nerd out Harry Potter style with each and every one of you. And we will also have exclusive Through the Gryffindor merch and a VIP meet and greet available for every show. We hope to see you all there. Ticket links can be found in the show notes or at supercarlinbrothers.com.
Welcome, dear listeners. I'm Jonathan Carlin.
And I'm Benjamin Carlin.
And we invite you to join us through the Gryffindor, your one-way ticket to the enchanting world of Harry Potter. So grab your wands, dust off your broomsticks, and join us as we unlock the mysteries behind Prisoner of Azkaban, Chapter 12, The Patronus.
Oh, man. Here we go.
Here we go. This is, like, I was reading, like, a lot happens in this chapter.
Yes.
Like Harry and Ron stop talking to Hermione for 2 months. Harry starts Patronus lessons. Lupin has a massively important conversation with him. Harry gets the firebolt back, and Pettigrew frames Crookshanks for murder.
Yes, it is. It is a huge chapter. It is remarkable to me to think, like, right here on the front end, it's like listeners at home know how long it is. We here in our time have no idea.
We don't know how long. But
I'm like, this could be beefy.
Could be a beefy one.
Could be a beefy one. Or maybe it'll be unexpectedly diet. Who knows?
Yeah. You know, we'll just see. We'll see. As ever, we can start with the chapter art here, which features, it's a rare one that features, like, Harry. Rather than being a picture of a thing, it's more like a picture of an action.
Yeah, it really is. I have mixed feelings about this one. So what's being depicted is we have the Boggart case with, like a Dementor-ish looking ghostly hand coming out.
Yeah.
And Harry is pointing his wand sort of directly at the case. The case itself, I think, is what throws me.
It seems small. Like, I always imagine it bigger. I also, like, Harry's proximity to it seems really close. Like, I always imagine when he's attacking the Boggart Dementor, it's, like, already fully formed and, like, several steps away from him. He's basically got his wand in the case.
Yeah. It seems more like he's on the streets of, like, a city, and somebody's got, like, an oddities box.
Right.
You know, and it's just sort of like, here's some trinkets you may look at.
Yeah.
But and I guess this is funny too, because even the book's description of the case is much more like a packing case, like what you would use for, like, travel.
Right. Like, the picture does depict what is described.
Correct. But I tend to think this is one where I think the movies did it better.
Yeah, like with the trunk.
I like the trunk. I think that feels, like, much more likely. The idea that, like, a boggart is just hanging out inside of, like, a suitcase.
Yeah.
Seems silly to me. I think the only thing that, in my opinion, that could make the case worse is if it had, like, little, like, rolly wheels.
Oh my gosh.
You know, could you imagine, like, it's just it's
little, like very, very muggle.
Yes, like, yeah. Like an extremely muggle briefcase.
It seems suitcase. Like, for some reason, like, having the trunks have wheels would make more sense even for the wizards. Like, but they don't, that seems like way too muggle. Like, even adding wheels to a thing is like, why would we do that?
We have levitation spells.
We can just levitate them. Yeah. Do we levitate them? No.
No,
but we could.
And that's, it's the thought that counts.
It's the thought that could have been thought that counts.
It almost seems like when you would buy, like, if you were to go to Diagon Alley and buy your trunk, then, like, it almost seems like they would just sell them very similar to, like, either Moody's or Hermione's, like, beaded handbag.
Yeah.
Where there are trunks that are, like, oddly large inside.
There's like the amount of like things you could invent in the wizarding world that they just like aren't doing yet is like, it'd be so easy to break in and just start making tons of improvements.
Yeah. You know? I mean, it's probably coming from our like our American brains that have been trained by capitalism.
Right.
It's like why don't they think of all these like small little things they could do to make their life better? You could open up so many shops.
Right. The answer is always just magic.
Magic.
It's like, yes, you could buy a trunk like that, or you could just do the spell yourself. You know, whatever. Actually, there's a moment in this chapter even where it's like Hermione can barely fit all of her books in her bag, and I'm like, boy, does she solve this problem?
She does. Yeah. She gets real clever real quick.
But not too quick, because she's still a problem in her third year.
Well, I mean, third year. I mean, give it another three, and we're basically four. Yeah. Three and a half.
Yeah. We're good.
Everything's gonna be fine. Not to worry. So I would call this, even though it's I think it's a really good chapter that I'm very excited to discuss, I would grade this chapter art very mid.
Yeah. Even though it features Harry, which not all of them do.
I know. Even the fact that Harry's not cloaked, this is like, it's another like one of those things where it's like he's wearing just like what you would look like you'd wear to like, I don't
right.
know, like rugby practice,
like muggle clothes.
But anyway, it's enough griping and more dissecting.
Indeed,
shall we?
Indeed. So the chapter, we're coming off the heels of McGonagall walking into the common room and taking Harry's firebolt away. And Harry is not sure he's ever going to see it again. He's positive there's nothing wrong with the firebolt, which like that, this, it's like, he's like so mad at Hermione, but like he's positive nothing's wrong with it. So like if that's true and nothing's wrong with it, then there's no problem. He'll just get it back.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's probably the impatience. Like, you know, you and I were just talking this morning because we have young children about the idea of sharing.
Yeah, yes.
And the idea that you pointed out is oftentimes at like a child's birthday party, if they open a gift and then you immediately tell the birthday kid, like, now share with everybody else. It's like they haven't had enough time to own the object to share it.
Right.
Like at this point in time, it's like, why am I letting all of these other people get to play with my brand new toy?
Right. Yeah. You can't share something you don't own.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But so for Harry, I could see a world where he's just very frustrated that after the loss of his Nimbus, which is like a friend to him, you know, he gets this brand new broom that he's so excited about and he just doesn't get to like have it for very long. You know, he's sitting there with his servicing kit doing nothing to it just to pretend like he's interacting.
I know. Right. I guess they're concerned they're going to like strip it down or something. Like what that exactly means, we don't really know, but that's the word they keep using that just sounds about like we're gonna strip it down.
I know. Yeah, maybe
like disassemble it.
Right. McGonagall, Flitwick and Hermione and company just need like some better branding for what they're doing. It's like, we're just gonna run some rudimentary spells on it. As long as there's nothing wrong with it, it will be fine.
Right. Like say those sentences and the whole problem is basically just like, oh, okay, cool.
Well,
thanks.
So let me ask you this question, though, because on the first page of this chapter, we get a line that specifically says, and you sort of referenced it already, he was positive that there was nothing wrong with the firebolt. And this is like one of those where it's like, this is being said more from like the narrator's perspective. Like Harry is certain that nothing's wrong with it. Like, so this is kind of one of those funny things because we've had a few of these moments with Harry inside of just prisoner before. Like for example, when he's like leaving the Dursleys after blowing up Aunt Marge and he feels like a prickle on his neck, you know, and it's like, he's being watched and he is being watched by Sirius Black, but like it feels more like ominous, but it's like, is that him using like his sort of like dark arts detection type of thing?
Oh, do you think this is like good just instincts?
That was the question I literally wrote was, right. is this like dark magic instincts or just sort of like wishful thinking? Like I'm sure nothing's wrong with it.
Oh yeah. I feel like it's more like wishful thinking here, but that's an interesting read. Is it? I mean, if that's true, he's also right again.
There is nothing wrong with it. Exactly. Yep. So that's almost the question. Like when he held it, it sort of gave like I think it says it like vibrates a little bit, like it immediately parks in air. It's like, I wonder if like Harry, especially with flying where he has like natural abilities, is like, I know broomsticks. I know that this thing is fine.
Right.
Like, you know, or anything else. Yeah.
Right.
So anyway, that was one of the curiosities just in that specific phrasing. Cause he's positive.
He's positive.
Yeah.
But so, and if I recall, it is just Harry, Ron and Hermione who are the Gryffindors who have stayed.
It appears to be
right. The
case, yes.
For I think Christmas break.
There are two first years at the feast as well as a Slytherin fifth year and then Harry, Ron, and Hermione.
Right, so at best two Gryffindor first years.
At best, two Gryffindor first years.
Right.
Yes. It seems like it would specify if they were Gryffindors.
They were there. Yeah. Yeah, but it doesn't seem like it. So I think they're the only three there. And they basically don't talk to Hermione anymore after Christmas. And it says, like, they were glad the rest of the school returned shortly after New Year's, which means Hermione has just been alone for like an entire week after Christmas.
Goodness.
Talking, like, being ignored by her best friends, which is like, ouch.
I know, that's
very painful. It's like very rare form for Harry. Like Ron, maybe, but like Harry too?
I know. Not Harry.
Yeah, not Harry.
I know, yeah. It's like you can almost imagine like Harry walking through the common room and like making like eye contact with Hermione and then Ron like grabbing his arm and being like, Harry,
we're mad at her, don't forget.
We're proving a point over here. Remember the firebolt.
Yeah. Speaking of which, as we turn the page here, Oliver Wood has a heck of a chapter here.
Jay, a heck of a chapter.
A real Oliver Wood chapter coming up.
I have so misremembered Oliver Wood as a character forever.
Yeah.
Like, I've always seen him as, like, beloved.
I know, yeah. Just I love Oliver Wood. He's a great guy. Loves Quidditch. He's captain. You know, he's leading the team. He's doing the best he can.
He wants to win. Real bad.
I mean, it is of such singular focus as to kind of start making him not a great guy.
Yeah, exactly. It's like Oliver, I want them to win too. You may have gone too far.
Yeah, so he walks right up to Harry, says, had a good Christmas, and then without waiting for an answer, because pleasantries are for losers, he starts asking. This is what he's asking. He says, if the Dementors come to... I've been doing some thinking over Christmas, Harry. After the last match, you know, if the Dementors come to the next one, I mean, we can't afford you to, well... And it's like, dude, like, Oliver, are you still blaming Harry for losing that match and not the Dementors?
This whole exchange, like, I'm not totally sure what, like, Wood is implying because...
I know.
Harry interrupts him and he's like, I'm working on it. Professor Lupin said he trained me to ward him off. We'll be starting this week. He said, you know, he would have time after Christmas. And then Wood responds with, well, in that case, I really don't want to lose you as seeker, Harry.
And I was like, I literally wrote, like, is that a threat?
I know.
I was like, Wood.
Like, literally, it is not clear to me what he means. Like to death or for being cut from the team?
Cut from the team.
He's threatening James Potter from the team.
I'm like, Wood, Oliver, come now.
He's the chosen one.
For falling off his broom when Dementors attacked?
I don't think anybody enjoyed that experience.
I don't think anyone enjoyed
Dumbledore
it.
Dumbledore was mad. Everybody else seemed to get it. You were the one still off in the showers trying to
drown yourself or something. Yeah, yeah. Fortunately, Harry has just the thing to save his spot on the team. And it mentions just casually that he got a fireball. Ron actually maybe saves a spot on the team, says he got a firebolt for Christmas, at which Oliver does a just straight up mid-sentence 180. A firebolt? No, seriously? A real firebolt?
Yeah. And then Harry's like, he's got to like, although Ron set Harry up for failure in this situation because it's like, Ron's like, he got a firebolt, and then he gets to see Oliver be so excited, and then Harry has to be like, but I don't have it.
I mean... Oliver can deal with it, but he comes out that they explained to him that they think maybe Sirius Black sends it to him and that maybe he's after Harry. And he just says, waving aside the information that a famous murderer was after a seeker, it says, but Black couldn't have put a firebolt. He's on the run. The whole country's on the lookout for him. How could he just walk into quality Quidditch supplies and buy a broomstick? And it's like, well, actually, the answer is that he has Crookshanks do it. I don't know if you're going to agree with that answer myself.
I know. That's like
that is the answer.
It is one of those details that later on he's like, yeah, I gave Crookshanks the note to go in and inform the shop to take the money from my vault. And it's like, no.
That doesn't work.
No.
I can't just send a second person into the shop and be like, you know what? I'd like one firebolt, please. It's for my cousin. And I'm related to the Lestranges, so if you could just take the money out of their vault.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. It'll be fine. It'll be fine.
This note will serve as all the proof you need, yes? Cool.
Yeah.
You never saw me.
Right. Yeah, no, it's a little bit ridiculous, because the other thing, too, is that Quality Quidditch Supplies, if I'm not mistaken, is in Diagon Alley.
Right. Yeah.
In London.
So. Yeah.
Is there a period of time where Crookshanks is missing prior to Christmas for like a lengthy...
Well, I think it's mail order. So he just has Crookshanks mail the form to the Firebolt manufacturers.
They
get the letter that says, take it from the Black Family Vault. And he's like, okay.
Deal. The thing that I would prefer in this particular situation is largely the fact that our explanation, at least prior to seeing this incredibly odd, maybe written after the fact line, that's not true. I'm just being salty about it. But was basically that like the goblins don't really care about the comings and goings of wizard things.
No, they don't. Yeah, like they do not. Like even when they're overhearing Griphook and his companion in Deathly Hallows, they're like, this is a wizard's war.
Right.
It's like, even while they're on the run from the Death Eaters, they're like, this really doesn't have anything to do with us.
Right, yes. It's like they're on the run just for like their own personal safety, not because they're taking some kind of like a stance or something.
Right. I don't think they care about Sirius Black.
Exactly the point. Yeah, where it's kind of like this weird like loophole where it's kind of like Gringotts, like safest place in the world. And it's like it is safe in terms of it's secure. Like, however, it's kind of like even like when Bellatrix goes there in there in Deathly Hallows, well, Hermione as Bellatrix, it's kind of like it. I mean, they know to be looking for a false Bellatrix, but it seems otherwise that Bellatrix could have just strolled right in there and it wouldn't have been any issue.
Wouldn't have been any issue. Yeah, like they know that you're right because. At that point, Bellatrix would be an escaped convict as well.
Right.
And if they didn't know to be looking for one, then she could have just walked right in and they'd have been like, we don't care.
Right. Yes.
Right. So, which to me, it would have been, more interesting if Sirius had like found a way to access Gringotts while it was open, but whilst no one else was there.
Exactly.
And then like just talk to the goblins and they'd look down at Sirius Black and be like, come on in.
You're a valued client.
Valued client. Good to see you back here, Mr. Black. Can we get you some hot coffee or anything? Yeah.
Some hot coffee.
He'd be like, coffee, this is London, okay? I'll have tea.
Oh, tea.
Remember when we were in London and we were asking for coffee and they were looking at us like we were bananas?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, good times.
And then they brought us either an Americano or I want to say a mint tea.
Yes, yes.
Yes, and an orange juice.
Right. Yeah. What I thought my order was going to be was a coffee with a shot of espresso in it and got orange juice.
Yeah. Yeah, it was weird.
It was an unexpected unexpected turn.
Yeah, I guess they don't serve coffee in every diner in London like they do here.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway.
Maybe so, or else all the people in London are like, which diner were you at?
Yeah, right.
they messed up.
Let me tell
don't
you what,
blame
it was
on
near
us.
King's Cross Station and it had a bunch of weird, creepy mouse statues everywhere.
It did. That was the one.
That was the one.
We were there, so maybe you've been there. Maybe you work there.
Maybe you do.
Wouldn't that be wild?
It would be.
Anyway, we can continue.
It does. I love when they tell Oliver that McGonagall wants to strip it down. It says wood went pale. And I was just like, breathe, Oliver, breathe.
It's going to be okay.
It's going to be okay.
Yep. But then Wood is basically like, I can go and talk to her. This is going to be fine.
I got it.
Yeah. This is like his blinders, really. Like, I mean, we've got the line before where it said waving aside the information that a famous murderer was after his seeker. It's like, this is like one of those where it's like Wood has gone so far as to assume this is not going to be a problem.
This is not a problem.
And he's like, even McGonagall will definitely understand, like, you know, it's worth you potentially dying in the name of, you know, being good at Quidditch.
Yeah.
And as we'll see later in the chapter, he is incorrect in this assessment.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, we have a little page break there, and then we just pick up with the classes again the next day, where it seems their little pep talk with Hagrid in the last chapter has really cheered him up, and he has an unusually good lesson teaching them about, like, I guess, fire salamanders.
Yes. Okay. So the phrasing, I think, is very interesting because it got me so excited and then mildly disappointed, but then I also learned something, so we'll call it a win. But basically what it says is that nobody was really interested in spending 2 hours on the grounds on a raw January morning, but Hagrid had provided a bonfire full of salamanders for their enjoyment. And I was like, no way. Is this like one of those like group names for something where like a group of salamanders is referred to as a bonfire?
Because oh, man.
That would be amazing. And
yeah.
I know that out in the real world, there are such a thing as fire salamanders that you and I have interacted with in a fire pit before. And they're like bright orange. And they were like, you know, there were like 15 of them in like a former fire pit.
Yeah.
It was really cool. Very interesting. And I think it's also like what informs like in Frozen 2, why like Bruni is like a fire salamander lizard type thing.
Yeah. Why the fire spirit is a lizard. Yeah.
Yes. So anyway, but I was like, okay, maybe this is like one of those things where like salamanders are not necessarily like flame on, you know, like they might be in the wizarding world, but maybe a group of salamanders is still referred to as a bonfire.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that is not the case. A group of salamanders is otherwise called a herd or congress. But I, from now on...
Congress is still pretty whimsical.
Congress is pretty... I think it's also maybe the name for a group of owls. Does that sound... Or maybe it's a parliament.
Oh, is it a parliament of owls and a murder of crows?
Yeah, yeah. I love animal group names.
I know. Which is flamboyance of flamingos.
Yes. 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 Anyway, go ahead. You have something else?
I looked it up. I was like, I wonder, like, is there a specific Fantastic Beast name for these creatures? And they're just fire-dwelling salamanders.
Oh.
So, yeah, not an exciting name there either.
So maybe we've just directly interacted with magical beasts. And we had no idea.
If only.
Yep. I think when you call, if I were to call our dad, I'm pretty sure the picture that would show up on his phone is a picture of me with the fire salamander.
I think you're right.
In front of my face. Yes. Yeah. Maybe we can find it. We can post it somewhere.
Mostly when I think about that day in the Adirondacks, it is the outrageous number of bugs that were assaulting us the entire hike.
There were many. Yeah, yeah, good times. And we got a bunch of anecdotes on.
Look at this.
On a chapter full of stuff to discuss.
Yes. So we always talk about Professor Trelawney being like so right about things, but this is actually a random little thing. They start palmistry and divination, and she wastes no time in telling Harry that he has the shortest lifeline she'd ever seen, which part of me was like, I wonder if even that is like, well, Harry does die, like, before any of these other people do, because, like, you know, Voldemort kills him in the forest later on.
Right.
So I was like, maybe that's like, you know what? That works. But I was like, you know what, though? Maybe this is just, maybe she gets the Harry first in the class. But Lavender, who loves Professor Trelawney, dies before Harry.
She does.
Yeah, maybe she tells him that and then gets the Lavender. Is like, oh, no.
Yeah, can you imagine? Yeah, like, it's my prized pupil.
Not you.
I know. Yep. Yeah. No, that's a really good point. Is there anybody else in this class that also goes down? This is going to be at least...
I think the rest of the Gryffindors make it, like Parvati and...
So only Lavender gets killed off out of their whole year?
I think so.
Out of everyone who dies? Oh my goodness gracious.
That is sad.
Lav. Oh, poor Lav.
Oh boy.
Otherwise, I feel like she is a little bit of like a Gryffindor punching bag.
It's like
out of everybody else, it seems. Well, I guess Seamus sort of has some like low points there where he's like sort of anti-Harry. Does anyone else though? I don't know if they.
Well,
really
I think
do.
That. Well, maybe it's like, I think there are like two other Gryffindor girls we just like
don't ever get to know.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the one thing that we must know about them to be true is that they, in Seamus's eyes, are not prettier than Parvati.
Right.
Because, because isn't that what he says? Like, how did you two get dates with the prettiest girls in our year?
Yes. Yes.
So at least per that.
At least that.
So their Wikipedia page, unnamed Gryffindor girls in Harry's year, could include the information. Seamus believes they are prettier or less pretty than Parvati.
There we go.
So there you go. Yep. Important
information indeed.
It's not important lore. Anyway, what do we have next?
What's random about that is that Seamus clearly thinks that Parvati is prettier than Lavender, and he doesn't like, and like this is of importance to him, and yet both of them are available, and he asks Lavender.
I have frequently had the same thought. It's like, Seamus, it kind of sounds like you might have a thing for Parvati.
Yeah.
Like, maybe next time don't ask her friend.
Right. Like, what are you doing? So that's random.
That is random.
Yes.
Yes.
Or maybe Seamus just likes Lavender and doesn't place such emphasis on looks, but he seems to based on his comment about Parvati and Padma.
I know. Yeah. 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 So maybe we'll come back to this when we get to the Yule Ball chapter of Goblet.
Right. Like, this is your fault, Seamus. But let's see. So moving right along down to the page here, we also learned that Professor Lupin still looks ill even after they come back. And I want to say, this is where they're wondering out loud, like, what's wrong with him? And Hermione starts tutting behind them with maddeningly superiority. And she... seems to have figured out what's wrong with them. And Ron, unfortunately, says, if you want to tell us, don't, said Ron. And Hermione agrees not to.
I know. This is like one of the... I have one of these exact same things because, like, you know, Ron goes, what are you tutting us for? And Hermione's like, nothing. And he's like, yes, you were. Like I said, I wonder what's up with Lupin. And you, well, isn't it obvious? And then you have that back and forth. Well, if you don't want to tell us, and it's like, fine. And she marches off. It's like, oh, My goodness, Hermione. Just tell them.
Oh, I know. Like, and this is the second book in a row where, like, Hermione has solved the plot but just doesn't get a chance. Or, well, this last time she didn't get a chance to tell anyone except Penelope Clearwater. And this time she just refuses to tell anyone.
I know.
Yes,
I know.
It's like, not that this isn't like Sirius is innocent. Pettigrew framed your parents. That was a betrayal. But it is a huge part of the plot that Lupin's a werewolf.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Yes. I think that this is just like a demonstration that, like, the workload is getting to Hermione and maybe she's being... maybe she's struggling to like maintain her usual like positive chipper outlook on life, and she's just like a bit more run down and irritable.
Right. Well, speaking of the workload, this is also the line where it says she's repacking her bag, which is so full of books it wouldn't close. That is the line earlier where I was just like, boy, by Deathly Hallows, she is carrying around like a certified library in a much smaller bag.
Yes.
Plus a billion other things.
I wonder if she's like contemplating the design work for such a bag for next year. You know,
right.
She's like in her head, she's like, I need a way to have the same size bag, but hold more things.
Hold more things.
Good thing there's magic.
Good thing I'm learning so many spells.
Yes. From there, though, Harry, it fast forward. Once again, we get a look at a little page break here again. And it is 8:00 on Thursday morning. Harry's leaving the Gryffindor Tower for the History of Magic classroom, which I just think is like a fun little piece of trivia, like a thing to remember. Like, which classroom does Harry do Patronus lessons in?
Yes.
The answer to that question is History of Magic. I feel like if we were asked that in a J versus Ben, it would be like, Defense Against the Dark Arts class?
Right,
or,
yes.
It's like, or is it Lupin's office? Are those different things, or are they the same thing?
What's random about this whole situation is that if you recall back to the first week of classes, they don't end up having Defense Against the Dark Arts until Thursday.
Okay.
That is like the day of the week in which they have the class.
Okay.
So when Harry is talking to Lupin, reminding him about his promise at the end of Defense Against the Dark Arts, Lupin says, let's see. Hold on, let me find it right here on the page. How about 8:00 on Thursday evening? But presumably he's saying this on a Thursday. Yeah, like, why not just say 8:00 tonight?
Right. Maybe he means 1 week from now.
Maybe he does.
And the implication is sort of like, it's like, you know, like if somebody was like, hey, do you have time to go like go grab a drink after work or something? And today is Tuesday, as if we're recording. Like, yeah, how does Tuesday look for you? Like, I would mean the following Tuesday.
So it's, I think you're right. It probably means next week rather than later that night.
How about Thursday? Today, yes. Of course.
Yes.
Yeah.
How about Thursday night? That's today. Okay, see you later.
Yep. But this is where he comes into the History of Magic classroom carrying a large packing case, which does, again, going back to the chapter art, it is an accurate depiction, even if it's one that I don't particularly agree with. Harry asks, what is that? And Lupin explains, it's another Boggart. I've been combing the castle ever since Tuesday, and very luckily I found this one lurking inside of Mr. Filch's filing cabinet.
Well, see, now he says since Tuesday, so it seems like they have Defense Against the Dark Arts on Tuesday as well, but... And maybe the schedule changes after the break or something.
That could be it.
Yeah, that could be it.
Maybe we'll go with that.
Yeah, not that it's that important, but just for consistency's sake.
If you feel like getting stuck on something.
I do.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
If you feel like being technical about it, and you know I do.
That's a deep throwback.
That is a deep throwback to a very old Super Carlin Brothers joke. Oh, man. Let's see. It's interesting. He finds the Boggart lurking inside of Mr. Filch's filing cabinet. And of course, our theory is that Filch is a poltergeist, right? And a poltergeist is an amortal being, not something that can die or be born.
Right.
So it just sort of exists. It's manifested by a certain amount of feelings. So it's interesting to me that this Boggart seems to have been lodged in his filing cabinet. I'm like, is he like where his office is? Is this like the spawn point for the amortal beings?
For the amortal beings of the castle. I genuinely think that could be true.
Yeah.
Like just legitimately. Yeah. And there's a couple of different interesting things that are happening with this detail, because I think one of those that's a great connection to Filch and the poltergeist concept, and then also what we're about to see unfold with the Boggart itself is sort of this like idea or implication, like, are Boggarts like not but just baby Dementors?
Oh, I have such thoughts about it.
Okay. We'll get to it here in a second.
Yes.
Before we get there, though, we also get a line from Lupin that says, there's a cupboard under my desk he'll like, which I find to be kind of interesting that, like, it almost sounds like he's taking care of, like, a pet.
I know,
like,
right?
It's, like, weird.
Why don't you just keep it in the suitcase?
Right. Well, I mean, keep it in the suitcase, or, like, who cares if it's comfortable? Like,
right, yeah. Like, what difference does it make?
It's a amortal being capable of manifesting your worst fear.
Right.
Like, are we looking after this?
We're looking at, right? Like you've already got it in a box. What's the problem?
Yeah. I think it'll be okay. Maybe he's going to leave it in the box in the cupboard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or maybe maybe he like cracks the door. How do you get the boggart to like go from like one spot to another?
I have no idea. I guess as soon as it opens for Lupin, he's like, and there's the moon. Haha. It's like a tennis ball. Boing. Yeah. I like that. He gets a tennis racket out and just thwacks it.
Thwacks it. Nice.
No problem. This is also when we are finally, for the first time, introduced to the Patronus charm.
Yes. Boom. Which is well beyond ordinary wizarding level.
Indeed.
Love that. Good setup for the OWLs.
Yes.
Let's see here. When it works correctly, I'm so sorry. Let me back up. So the description of the Patronus, I think it really makes me feel like the whole concept of what the Patronus is and does, I feel like was very cooked up, thought out from the very beginning.
Yeah.
But basically it's a guardian that acts as a shield between you and the Dementor, which is sort of like what Harry's going to be able to do in this lesson.
Yeah. It's interesting. It's like, it's described as a positive force, a projection of the things the Dementor feeds upon, but it can't feel despair. So it makes it sound like if you could like resist their powers to the point where like you did not feel the despair from them, like then they couldn't affect you, or you could drive them away or something.
Oh, that's interesting. You know?
Which is almost kind of like what Sirius is like. Not like he doesn't drive them back, but like he does not feel the despair.
Yeah, it definitely seems like whatever Sirius is doing is kind of like a special level of relationship with the Dementors, even if there is like the caveat that he's like not guilty for the crime he committed.
Would like occlumency protect you from Dementors in this way? Like, are they, I guess, not really attacking your mind. They're attacking more like your emotional state.
I think it maybe could. It's like, because occlumency is the art of closing your mind.
Right. Which, like, if your mind was closed, could they make him, like, relive those moments from his mother?
Interesting question.
Yeah.
Interesting question. I mean, I could see a world. I mean, it's like, surely if, like, you know, Dumbledore or Fudge or anybody is ever communicating with the Dementors, there must be a way to get close enough to them to not feel...
Right.
Everything in full force. Like,
yeah.
You know, there's some kind of working relationship going on there. So it would maybe stand to reason, although it would also seem like if that was that easy, then like Bellatrix, I think, teaches Draco occlumency later on in Half-Blood Prince.
Mm-hmm.
And if that was the case, then it would also mean that she was being less affected by the Dementors.
You're right, by the Dementors, because she could like shield herself off from them.
Yeah, but
it also seems like then Sirius could have taught Harry occlumency.
Also that. Yep, that's a good point. The one thing I would say there, though, in regards to Bellatrix, is that she is also imprisoned in Azkaban for quite a long time. And while she is... not exactly what you would regard as, you know, grounded in terms of her personality.
It doesn't seem like she was grounded beforehand either.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, I mean, maybe she wasn't. Maybe she was more like imprisoned, but not really being like deteriorated the same way that other prisoners seem to describe it as.
Right. She just couldn't turn into a dog to get through the bars.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Could be.
Through the Gryffindor, sponsored by Shopify. Boy, howdy, where to begin? I remember graduating college and having aspirations of becoming an entrepreneur. I was brimming with ideas. A kitchen tool that made spiral cut hot dogs, or a phone case that uses a special retractable cables to wrap around any surface for selfies. I had no idea how to make these ideas a reality, and spoilers, I still don't. However, what I have learned through my various other endeavors is how to take products and make them available for purchases online, thanks to Shopify. Shopify is an e-commerce platform that makes designing your webpage, setting up your store, and making your first sales a breeze. But the best part is that after that first sale, Shopify scales with your growth, meaning it's perfect whether you're selling tens, hundreds, or even thousands of products monthly. And I am a data person, and boy does Shopify have data. Want to know how many hot dog spiralizers you sold between May 29th and July 5th? That's peak hot dog season. Boom, data in no time. Also, the answer is zero. I still don't know how to make a hot dog spiralizer, but if I did, I would know exactly how to sell them. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout that we use with Shopify. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/griffin. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/griffin to upgrade your selling today. Go to shopify.com/griffin to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/griffin. Through the Gryffindor is sponsored by Rosetta Stone. Y'all, when I was in high school, I took 4 whole years of Spanish under Senora Dickerson, no less. And yet, despite all of this energy invested, countless vocabulary tests, and oral exams, I simply wasn't able to retain the language. And now into adulthood, I've fully and completely caught the travel bug and would love to see more of the world. And to be prepared for it, I have a whole new appreciation for actually taking in a new language, which is where Rosetta Stone steps in. As the most trusted language learning program, it's available on both desktop and app and truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, ensuring true retention along the way. Rosetta Stone uses an intuitive process that allows you to pick up the language naturally, first with words, then phrases and sentences. The huge milestone for me, though, is the moment you can actually think in another language. Like, how cool would that be? So don't put off learning that new language. There is no better time than right now to get started. Through the Gryffindor, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off and unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today today.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Alo or Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret? With Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whatever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/try to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/try.
Let's see. Then we learn that each one's unique to the wizard who conjures it. So that's kind of cool. And then Harry has this interesting challenge where Lupin says the way you do it is by concentrating on a happy memory. And you're basically going to try to like manifest that happy memory into like a full fledged being. And Harry has the distinct disadvantage here of not having that many happy memories.
Dude, the line that just said Harry cast his mind about for a happy memory is like, oh no.
I know.
It's
I
like,
know.
Oh gosh. Like that's, it's like, surely there's, I left one here
somewhere.
Yeah. It's tough. So then the first one that he does settle on though, was the moment that he had first, ridden a broomstick, which I just think is also what I highlighted that as another piece of little trivia there for you.
Yep.
It's like, what is Harry's first Patronus thought? And let's see here, the wonderful soaring sensation. Lupin then gives him the incantation for the spell, which is, of course, Expecto Patronum.
Expecto Patronum.
It's kind of cool, like, that Harry is just standing there sort of like, you know, reiterating the spell over and over again. And then suddenly something whooshed out of the end of his wand.
Like it works. And it's like, that's actually pretty impressive. I'm surprised that, like, he doesn't have him do more training without the Dementor, like just get used to casting it in regular settings first.
Right. I know. That's a really good point. Like I almost wonder if at all, and I honestly can't remember when Harry's teaching the DA, does he end up using a Boggart for
I don't think so.
So maybe that's something that like Harry is actually doing a better job of teaching.
Yeah.
He's getting a lot of success and like many of his pupils end up getting corporeal.
Yeah, I know. Patronuses. Yeah, a lot of them do. So it's like that is my thought as well. That like maybe Harry was like actually even better at teaching this particular thing.
Right.
Than
right.
Lupin.
Just another nod in the Harry should have been the future defense against the Dark.
Oh my gosh.
I know. Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. One of these. Well, I was going to say one of these days, but I have a feeling they won't change the
epilogue. They're not going to change the epilogue. Yeah, it's not happening anytime soon. All right. And then we get another just absolute. Well, first of all, I can't believe that they like Lupin is just like, all right, very good. You've got it. Ready to try it on a Dementor? Just like, boom, right to it.
Yes, yes. Like, let's dive on in.
Let's dive on in, but no time like now.
I suppose a big reason for it going the way that it's going, or maybe even like Lupin's like, you know, methods here, could be the case that like the eventual reveal that Harry's Patronus is a stag is...
Yeah, that's true,
it's a
too.
Huge plot point.
It's a huge plot point. Like, so. it would be interesting. Although it's not like if it came out, like if he'd managed to make the Corporeal Patronus now, like Lupin would see it and know what it meant. But like Harry would just be like, oh, cool, a deer, you know?
Wicked.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's cool. Like he wouldn't have any context for it just yet. But like then maybe you, the reader, could put like together prongs ahead of time.
Maybe so. Maybe so. Yeah. Although prongs, I feel like is...
That's the hard one.
It's rather vague. I mean, yeah. You know, the other ones definitely fit a lot, but a fair bit more. But I can just imagine Harry standing there with this amazing looking giant silvery stag in front of him. It's like, Lupin. How cool is this?
How cool is this? Like, and Lupin's like, oh my God.
You have no idea.
He's like, oh, I got the chills, Harry.
I'm going to need to leave because I'm about to
cry. Speaking of crying, Ben.
I know.
Oh my gosh. So Harry is thinking about facing the Dementor. Any second now he might hear his mother again, but he shouldn't think that. Or he would hear her again, and he didn't want to. Or did he? And I was like, oh, just right in the gut. Right. Oh, my God.
I know. It's like he wants to hear from his family so badly he is willing to endure hearing the sounds of their death.
Oh, my gosh. I know. It is so sad.
It is
so sad.
It is really, really super sad.
Yeah, like this is the man. That's yeah. Okay, so we're gonna move right past that.
Yep. Yeah.
That was terrible.
Before anybody gets too misty.
I know. But then what's crazy is that like I think it's interesting that as the Boggart comes out, it like looks like the Dementor. But what's crazy is that it can emulate the powers of the Dementor.
Yes.
Which to me is like more of the proof that it. Is like a baby Dementor.
I know. I mean, a Dementor arose from the box, its hooded face turned towards Harry, one glistening scabbed hand gripping its cloak. The lamps around the classroom flickered and went out. And then it says a wave of piercing cold broke over him. And it's like this, I mean, it's like, I know it's not a real Dementor, but it's like the effects, it's happening.
Right.
You know?
Like when Ron has the Boggart turn into an Acromantula, right? Like, if it bit somebody, like, I don't doubt that it could bite somebody and that it would hurt, but, like, would it have Acromantula venom?
No, it couldn't possibly.
It couldn't, right? Yeah. But then this shouldn't work either.
It doesn't seem like it should work
It doesn't seem like it should work, but it feels like, obviously, it does work, which to me means that these two creatures, the Boggart and the Dementor, are related.
Well, I mean, and they also both prey on fear. Like,
right,
that is
yes.
their primary, like, function as like, creatures, and they're both immortal beings.
Right, they're both immortal beings. One transforms into your worst fear, and one makes you relive your worst fear.
Right.
So it's like... They seem so connected.
They definitely yeah. do. And sure enough, right in line with the rest of that, we do see that Harry does end up hearing his mother's voice again. Not Harry, please, I'll do anything. And then you hear Voldemort's voice, stand aside, girl. And to which I just wrote like a little bit note, like, it's like, is it possible that both Harry and the piece of Voldemort's soul are both like hearing the same worst memory?
Oh, it is Voldemort's worst memory too. You'd have to think
it's the moment of his failure,
right? Like, that is very true. That is quite possible,
right?
Yeah, like maybe that's really why it affects him more,
right?
Because it's like two souls are being affected by it,
right? And it happens to be the case that their worst memory is the same
is
worst
the same
memory.
Moment. Yeah. Ooh, that makes yeah. sense. I think so, because like you're right. Like there's no way other students didn't like lose people. At other points
know,
that are,
yeah.
you know, it's like...
That's the thing. It's like the fact that Harry is so particularly affected doesn't seem like it would track. It's like,
yeah.
you know, it's like one student out of hundreds has experienced trauma.
Right.
Like, I mean, there's just no way.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, we know that like Neville's parents were like tortured into insanity.
Yes.
You know? It's like, you don't want to like compare trauma or anything.
Oh, no, of course.
You know?
Yeah.
But,
no,
like,
no. Right.
Like,
yeah.
It's just sort of like, I think... Other students would have experienced really bad things that could cause them to pass out.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. I mean, because, yeah, I mean, even the way that Hagrid describes being around a Dementor at all, it sounds like the actual worst.
Yes.
So, yeah, even that's like, you know, you go back to like Malfoy making fun of Harry all the time. It's like, it just doesn't make sense. Like, surely the other students are like, Draco, it sucks. Like,
right.
it's not fun to be around. Like, sure,
right.
Harry passed out, nobody else passed out, but like, you felt it.
Right. Like we all felt it.
Yeah. It's like none of us thought it was like a walk in the park.
Yeah, exactly. And especially Draco, who we know for a fact, like when hid in front of George's cabin on the train.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yes. All right. Yeah. So moving on, though, Lupin gives him a chocolate frog, which is fantastic. He doesn't say what card he got, whatever.
I know. What's up with that?
Yeah, I know. Also, I can't believe Lupin has Harry practice it, but Lupin himself does not demonstrate making a Patronus ever. You know, it seems like maybe he could show him.
Yeah, that's a good right? point as well, right? Like would Lupin have made like his own full blown
wolf? Probably. Yeah. That's probably another thing. It's like, oh yeah, we can't have Lupin show him what a Patronus looks like, because then it'd be a wolf and you'd be like,
It's the pieces are really starting to come
really
together.
Starting to come together.
Maybe maybe a scooch too on the nose.
So there's that. And then let's see. He also offers him a way out. Says, Harry, if you don't want to continue, I will more than understand. And Harry's of course like, but what did they show up at the Quidditch match?
I know. I wrote a note next to that. I was like, it's amazing that Quidditch is staying top of mind for him during all this. Like, he's experienced his worst fear. He's passing out. He's having to relive the death of his mother, like hearing right. the voice of Lord Voldemort.
I know. And he's like, nope. Doesn't matter. Quidditch.
We can't lose to Ravenclaw.
Spending too much time with Oliver Wood here, my man.
I think so.
Yeah. Let's see.
He then changes the memory that he's using as well.
Yes.
To try to like ramp things up a little bit and switches from first ride on the broomstick over to his feelings when Gryffindor had won the house championship last year, because that would definitely qualify as very happy.
Yes, it does. It's interesting though. I thought it was interesting. Like what kind of memories don't work? Like why isn't this a happy enough memory? Like this is him defeating Voldemort. Like it's not necessarily the memory of him defeating Voldemort. It's specifically them winning the cup. And it's like, is that because it's more of like a surface level happiness and not like a, like what makes you happy to your core kind of thing?
I know. The example that I was about to give, and I was almost like, I'd be willing to bet that surely somebody right now could contest this. And it's just a bad read on my part. But I was like, you know, if you were trying to create your like Patronus memory, and let's say, you know, like your favorite team won the Super Bowl, it's like, is there a world where like the joy that you would experience of having won the Super Bowl, like your team having won the Super Bowl, like would that work, you know,
right?
Like, would that be satisfactory enough?
I don't know.
You know, versus like the first time my child squeezed my finger,
right,
or something,
yeah.
You know, and it's like their first laugh, first step.
Yeah,
it's like,
seems like all of those are like, you know, like core. They feel happiness like
much more deep. Yeah, I mean, yeah. You said shallow. I think, like in regards to like, I don't know if like maybe it doesn't have quite as much depth to it. But yeah, he continues to get there.
Yep. So let's see. This time, though, when the Dementor attacks, he hears his dad for the first time, which is crazy. And then, which is also leads him to telling Lupin that it's the first time he's heard his dad. God, he's crying. Says there's tears on his face. Like, oh, geez, Harry. My goodness. But then Lupin says, you heard James? Which is just like, this is the first time you know that Lupin and James were friends. Which is another Marauder's hint if you're trying to figure out like, oh, who are the four Marauders are.
Right.
Like you maybe now, at least now you know that James and Sirius and Peter were three.
Right.
And now you know that Lupin was friends with James as well.
Right.
So now you have four. You officially have four people who could be the Marauders.
But again, you know, like I know we use it as an example often, and I think that this is like where like the reveal on things like this tend to work so well, because it's like the Tom Marvolo riddle. Like the information is never put side by side. It's like this information is deeply spaced out across a bunch of very big chapters. And what's happening inside of this chapter, especially if it's your first read, it's fascinating to watch Harry do this like cool bit of magic.
Yeah.
And he's interacting with the Boggart and like whatever. So it's like, it almost feels like a throwaway line. Like, oh yeah, like Lupin and
James.
That's
always
like,
how it is.
I know. Yeah. It's but it's right there. So it's like, if you're paying attention, if you're keeping notes, you know, it's like, okay, I got it.
Yes. He does confirm that they were friends at Hogwarts. So there's that. It's, which is crazy. It hasn't come up before now, you know, like, it makes it seem like they, like, were sort of buddies, like, you know, the way Harry and Dean are friends or something. And it's like, that's not it's like they're like four best buds.
Yes. Like, yeah. I mean, the bestest of buds.
The bestest of
the
buds.
The definition of friendship.
Yes. Yeah.
Shy of, you know, the Golden Trio themselves.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But so anyway, the next time he gets... Does he get a little bit closer next time, right? He has...
Let's see. One more go. And I think... Is this the stage where he... I'm trying to think.
Says the memory here. Yeah, because this one, it comes out. The scream inside Harry's head started again. This time it sounded as though it were coming from a badly tuned radio. Softer, louder, softer again. And he could still see the Dementor. It had halted. And then a huge silver shadow came bursting out of the end of Harry's wand, right? Okay, so... this time, his third try, he's a lot more successful. And the memory he's chosen is the moment he'd first found out he was a wizard and would be leaving the Dursleys for Hogwarts, right? Which is a very interesting memory.
Yes.
Because, like, I agree. Extremely, extremely happy. Great moment in Harry's life. However, in the moment, when Hagrid tells Harry he's a wizard, Harry is not happy. In the moment, he's confused. So this memory is only happy, like, retroactively, like, with context.
Sure.
Like, yeah. Further by Harry, which is, like, that's interesting because the like, it's like your what that memory makes you feel versus how you felt inside of the memory is almost more important.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's a fascinating observation to define the difference between, because, like, I can even go back to the night that, like, I met my wife Alice, you know, at, like, a Starbucks.
Right.
And I can tell you that, like, that day I was just plain nervous.
Right.
You know, and, like, in the moment I was like, I have no idea if I'm doing a good job right now. And you know, like, when I think back about that day, I'm like, ah, good day.
Good day.
Like, what a great, you know, like, that, yeah, that worked out so well.
Yeah.
You know, like, what a, if not for that day, then none of this. And so, you know, it's like, you're right. Like, it's like, you can almost, like, repaint the memory. Whereas, like, that night, I think I would have just been like, I have no idea.
Right. Yeah.
I blacked out.
Extremely nervous.
Yeah.
Yes. But your memory of it is very happy,
exactly.
Even though when you were living that memory, not as happy.
Yeah. Sweaty palms.
Sweaty palms, yeah. Yes. Because Harry doesn't even believe he's a wizard. He's like, what are you talking about? Even when he wakes up the next morning, he's like, that didn't even happen.
Right.
That
right.
Wasn't even possible.
It can't be.
It can't be.
Yep.
But obviously, since then, he's like, that was the best day ever. Oh, my God. Yes.
What does it also say about the Dursleys? Like, one of the best days of Harry's entire life to the point where he can create a Patronus was the fact that he got to leave them.
Oh, I know. Especially with what is otherwise, he's like, he's so desperate for family that he wants to hear his parents' voices, like, moments before they're murdered.
Yeah.
It's like, he's that desperate for family, even though he has living relatives.
Right.
Like, that's how bad they are.
That's how bad they are. That's yeah. That's the testament to the Dursleys.
Yes.
Yikes. Yikes.
Bam.
Vernon.
Anyway, so Lupin helps... After Harry sort of fends off the Boggart this time, the silvery orb reappears to help remind you that Lupin is afraid of the moon, although it's still not phrased that way.
Yes.
And so that was definitely a start. That was very good. Good for Harry. And then Harry circles back, does some good math, realizes that if you knew my dad, you must have known Sirius Black as well. And Lupin, of course, is like, what? I don't know, but what makes you say that?
don't be silly.
Don't be ridiculous. And he's like, well, he was my dad's best man. And he's like, I knew him. Sure. I thought I did.
Right. Yes. Yes. I mean, yes. Because, you know, at this point in time, Lupin still doesn't know that Sirius is innocent.
Right. Yes. Lupin at this moment thinks Sirius is guilty.
Yes. Yep. And that, I think there's another line that's going to come up possibly later in the chapter. Yes, it will. So we'll come back to it. But I think it'll speak to Lupin and Sirius's relationship a bit further as well. But then, yeah, we get like another interesting kind of line from Harry speaking again about this idea of just like hearing his parents' voices. Terrible though it was to hear his parents' last moments replayed in his head, these were the only times Harry had heard their voices since he was a very small child.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just like, but he'd never be able to produce a proper Patronus if he half wanted to hear his parents again.
Ugh.
That's the line that I think really kills.
Yeah, that is. It is so sad.
Yeah, it's like, is there a piece of him that is actively holding back.
Yes.
That's what that's saying, right?
Yeah, basically. Like part of him is like not trying as hard as he could because part of him wants to hear his parents' death again. But I really, really do like the next line then where he says, "They're dead," he told himself sternly. "They're dead, and listening to echoes of them won't bring them back." Because, oh man, it's so sad. But this is such an important sentiment by Harry because it reveals like Harry's real understanding and like the reality of death.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
which is like something Voldemort does not understand.
I mean, it's the key theme of the whole saga.
Right.
Is that death is not something to be, you know, like avoided.
Right.
You know, it's like, it's not this terrible thing, even though, you know, it is sad.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, like Voldemort's relationship with life and death is so unnatural.
Right, exactly.
Yes.
And Harry is like, he wants to hear them so bad, but he knows that's not real. That's not realistic and it's not helpful.
Right.
To imagine that. Although I do not like the follow-up sentence that says, "You'd better get a grip on yourself if you want to win that Quidditch Cup."
I know.
Like,
I know.
Harry!
I know.
You're having a moment there. It's not about Quidditch.
I wonder if this is a huge dichotomy though, because like I know, I mean, it comes up a bunch of times in this chapter, but like to me, I think, you know, I'm trying to think of how old I would have been when this book came out, like 9, 10 years old. The Quidditch Cup would be something that I personally at that age would have held in extremely high regard.
I mean, it is. This is like, you have to remember, this is like a 13-year-old and yeah, they're playing sports and that is, you know, of singular focus.
Yes, like, but it's fascinating because like, I think that this is almost like how this book can appeal to both young and mature audiences alike.
Yeah.
Because what you have there is like, there's a narrative that like, you know, that I myself as a child was more bought into, and the deep meanings of death and the importance of all the rest of this stuff, like
right.
That wasn't resonating with me as a young kid.
Right.
You know, it was we got to win Quidditch. We got to beat Malfoy. Like,
exactly.
That's everything.
Yes.
But now I feel like the otherwise it's like, it's also walking a different line where it's speaking to like much deeper themes.
Yes, yes. Which stands out more as an adult.
Yes, exactly.
But speaking of Quidditch, Ravenclaw played Slytherin a week after the start of turn, and Slytherin won, which according to Wood is good news for Gryffindor, which I guess means that Draco beats Cho, right?
It does mean that Draco beats Cho. Yes, yes. Yeah. It's one of those moments where it probably is like undersold a little bit because like Malfoy is good at Quidditch.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's not a skill of his. He's
right.
Just not Harry.
Yeah. It is like, kind of surprising to me. It almost would not surprise me if there was like, because it says Slytherin won, though narrowly, like let's make sure they didn't just win by a lot or anything.
Right.
Like, I'm almost surprised it doesn't say Slytherin won, the Ravenclaw seeker caught the snitch, but... not because of Draco. Yeah, yeah.
We're not going to give him that.
Yeah, not going to give him that. But so if we're keeping track of it, this means that in this book, Cedric has beaten Harry, Cho has beaten Cedric, Draco has beaten Cho, and Harry will beat Draco.
Okay, wow.
So
yes.
All of that, of course, Cedric's win over Harry is like a little asterisk next to it.
I mean, a little bit. Yeah. Even he agrees with that.
Even Cedric agrees with that.
Because he's so good.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing I would say here, though, is that if Ravenclaw, or if Slytherin narrowly won, it actually might mean that Draco is the best player on the Slytherin team.
Oh, that wouldn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, but I mean, but isn't that, that's kind of wild though, like, because what that means is that like the chasers were not putting up points, the keeper was not keeping out points. You know, hard to know what the beater's role in everything was going to be, but clearly not stopping the opposing Ravenclaw chasers.
Right. So if they won narrowly and Draco caught the snitch, it means that they must have scored, like, they must have been up by like 13 or 14.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So it's like, you know, that's like where it's like, did they win like 160 to 140?
Right.
You know, it's like they scored like one hoop.
Right.
And caught the snitch. Meanwhile, they were otherwise getting the floor mopped with them.
Could mean that.
So,
yeah.
I mean, Draco would be a little bit of a hero for that match.
Yeah. Yeah. But you'd think he'd be bragging about it a lot more.
Well, you know, he's just too obsessed with Harry to pay attention to even his own
performance. I know I caught the snitch, but did you see Harry pass out for the Dementors?
That's what gets the lols.
I know. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Here is a line, though. This is kind of interesting as well. So I was thinking about this earlier where I was talking about Hermione being like a scooch more irritable than we might expect from Hermione, like when she was unwilling to tell the boys about Lupin's affliction as a werewolf. Basically, what Harry is up against is he just has one night a week to do all of his homework. Even so, he wasn't showing the strain nearly as much as Hermione. And this is between doing Lupin's anti-dementor classes, which just for the record, like when he was done fighting that last little Boggart Dementor, it says he was feeling as exhausted as if he had just run a mile.
Yeah.
His legs were shaking. Like, he's completely worn out. Like, this is like a super taxing endeavor for him to be going through. And Hermione's just taking three more classes than him. So it's like Harry is doing like a lot of physical, time consuming, mind consuming, emotionally heavy tasks while Hermione is up against like her course load. It's like, it almost does seem like Harry is just like handling it a little bit better.
It kind of does. Like three more. How much homework is in arithmetic and muggle studies, which has got to be a cakewalk for Hermione.
Exactly.
Yeah. And like, I mean, study of ancient runes, that feels like translating probably a lot of stuff, but it's like there's charts. So just look at the chart.
Is it busy work?
Busy work? I don't know. Yeah. Seems like it might be. I don't know. It's obviously taking its toll on her. The other thing is that she must be awake for like three extra hours a day. I guess that could be doing
that,
it.
And she's been doing it for a whole semester.
Yeah.
Longer, so
it's adding up.
It's definitely adding up.
But then, at this point it almost feels like this is so hard to know. Like with hindsight, of course, it's so obvious that it's time travel, but like there's this whole paragraph here where like, how's she doing it? Getting to all of her classes, said Ron. I heard her talking to Professor Vector, that arithmancy witch, this morning. They were going about yesterday's lessons, but Hermione can't have been there because she was with us in care of magical creatures. And Ernie McMillan told me she never missed a Muggle Studies class, but half of them are at the same time as divination. So, you know, like, which is, I guess Ernie's not taking divination, but yeah.
Right, you know. Right. Yes.
But it's like, it's almost like, as of this paragraph, it's like, is time travel just obvious?
I mean, that's the thing. Like, I think that what's really going on here is that, like, because it's Ron who's complaining about it, I feel like you, the reader, is almost just living inside of this sort of, like, I don't really know. I don't really care. Like,
right,
like,
exactly.
She's doing it somehow. Like, if Harry was bothered by it, I'd probably be, like, much more invested. But Harry's just too preoccupied with his own stuff to really be like, I don't know how she's doing it, man.
Right.
Like, she is, though, so who cares?
Like, exactly. Like, it doesn't affect you.
So I think that that's, like, the big thing that's going on here. It's like, there is, like, I mean, the writing is literally on the wall. It's like, she can't be in two places at once. It's come up over and over throughout the whole story. Like, but for whatever reason, nobody seems terribly preoccupied about this.
Nope. Yeah. They're just like, whatever.
Yeah.
But then Oliver Wood returns with, Oliver.
Oh, yes. Yes.
he talks to McGonagall, and she got a bit shirty with me.
Shirty. I love the word.
Great
shirty.
Word. Great yes. word. Absolutely. Seem to think I care more about winning the cup than I do about you staying alive, which I highlighted, and we're just like, well, that's true.
Yes. I said, yes. Yes, Wood. This whole book.
Yes. Just because I told her I didn't care if it threw you off as long as you caught the snitch, which is also very funny.
Wood shook his head in disbelief.
Yeah.
Honestly, the way she was yelling at me, you think I said something terrible.
I know. I'm like, I'm not sure I like Oliver Wood.
I know. Yeah, it's like, do we maybe like Marcus Flint more than Oliver Wood out of nowhere?
Yeah, right. Probably not. But let's see. Yeah, that's just speaking so much more to the character there. And then he tells him that maybe he needs to get a different broomstick anyway. And he says, maybe get a new Miss 2001 like Malfoy's got. And he says, I'm not buying anything Malfoy thinks is good, which I think is funny because Malfoy specifically buys the Nimbus 2001 because of what Harry has.
Because of what Harry has. Yeah.
He's like, what's Harry got? I'm going to one up that guy. And Harry's like, what's Malfoy got? Not that.
I will have anything else.
Anything else, please.
I will just run around on the ground trying to grab at the air.
That's right. Maybe it's got to come down near the bottom sometime.
Yes.
Running around.
Harry's just physically on his feet.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Good times.
That would be bad. Anyway, next up, we have another page break here. It says January faded imperceptibly into February, meaning that it has been a solid 5 weeks since they basically talked to Hermione at this point, which is terrible.
Poor thing.
I know.
I mean, it'd be so lonely and so much work.
I know.
Yeah, like that would be...
What a bad January.
I know, that'd be really, really tough to juggle. But this is the part of the book, I feel, where like the speed ramp is starting to happen on the, on the months, mm-hmm. where it's kind of like, okay, we need a way to get towards the end of the school year so that
Harry can fight Voldemort.
So that more plot can happen.
Exactly.
Yeah. But in the meantime, Harry is spending lots and lots of time basically nagging Professor McGonagall for news about the Firebolt, where she said that she's checked for all of the usual curses, but Professor Flitwick believes the broom might be carrying a hurling hex. It really does start to make you wonder, though. It's like, how sensitive is the kind of magic that they are performing that it has taken... You know, that it's now taken
5 weeks.
Yeah, over a month.
I know. I'm like, how long can it take? How have you not checked for a hurling hex yet, McGonagall? Why didn't you start with that?
I know. Yeah, it's like, what were all the other dangerous things that could have happened?
I know. A hurling hex. Anyway.
Yeah, that feels like another piece of trivia that I will never be able to digest into my brain. Maybe the alliteration, you know, hurling hex.
Yeah.
You know, being thrown from your broom. We've almost seen it happen before. That's what Quirrell's basically doing to him. So.
Right.
Let's see here.
So otherwise, Harry's getting better, sort of better at his Patronus lessons, but he's sort of plateauing.
Yes. Yeah. Well said.
Yes. He can almost always produce something, but all it does is hover like a semi-transparent cloud, draining Harry of energy.
Yes. Basically now is when you can kind of just imagine like the silver orb, where it's just sort of like two wills, you know, in battle with one another. And you have to imagine in this particular case that like Harry doesn't really quite have it down versus like what an apparently true blue Dementor would be capable of bringing, let alone like multiples.
Right. But then it also follows up and says Harry felt angry with himself, guilty about his secret desire to hear his parents' voices again, which continues to be tragic.
I know.
But it's also sort of like maybe this is why he's plateauing, because he can't quite get over this.
Right.
But Lupin assures him that for a 13-year-old, the fact that he's producing anything is a huge achievement, which appears to be true. Based on how no one else can ever seem to do it.
Do you figure the reason that there's so much emphasis in this chapter on this feeling that Harry is experiencing is like what ultimately fuels the big moment at the end? Because he thinks it's his dad casting the Patronus, and then in that particular moment, he's dropping all other concerns. Like, it's the first time that he's, like, officially just, like, attempting to do it. Like, Harry's had it in him this whole time.
I mean, he's definitely had it in him this whole time. He fully casts it during the Quidditch match, too.
Okay.
Like, he produces the stag there. He just doesn't see it because he, like, veers off to catch the snitch.
Oh, yeah. You're right. Okay. Yep. Okay. That's a good point. Yep. Okay. So, let's see here.
This is when he produces the butter beer. Where Harry, just like for all of his otherwise good instincts, Lupin's like, you won't have tried it before. And Harry just is like, oh, I like that stuff. Like, Harry, he just said it.
Think on your feet, man.
Yeah. But also just a random assumption by Lupin that he won't have tried it. Like, is this the only place you can get it? Is the Three Broomsticks? Or
could be.
No, it's not, because they ordered it at the Hogshead too.
Oh. Okay.
But like, why couldn't they have brought bottles back? You've got bottles. So anyway, random assumption there.
Right. Yep. That's a good point. So then this is when we start to get the full description of what the Dementor is actually capable of.
Yes, the Dementor's kiss.
It lowers its hood only to use its last and worst weapon. What I think is interesting is, so Lupin says they call it the Dementor's kiss with a slightly twisted smile. And this is something that I think like... he later on says it's the fate that awaits Sirius Black. And I think that twisted smile could potentially be like, this is demonstrating Lupin, who is otherwise, I would argue, an innately good human being.
Yeah.
Like, he hates Sirius in this moment.
Yeah, I think so.
He basically is sort of like, the idea of Sirius having to face down the Dementor's kiss is kind of like, yeah, that's what he deserves.
Well, but at the same thing, at the bottom of this page, Harry is going to say he deserves it, and Lupin is the one who says, you think so? Do you really think anyone deserves that?
Well, I mean, even that, then I almost feel like his first instinct is more like, tenacious in nature. Like, well, otherwise, what is the slightly twisted smile, would you say?
I don't know. It is a weird phrasing.
Yeah.
They call it the Dementor's kiss. To me, the fact that it's a twisted smile is supposed to make you think Lupin, like, enjoys the idea of the Dementor's kiss, or is like... Because you're supposed to think Lupin is the one helping Sirius get into the castle. Or, like, that's, I think, the road they're trying to lead you down.
So this is supposed to be more of like a red herring, like a misdirect?
Yeah, I think maybe.
Okay.
That's my take on it. The slightly twisted smile, or it could just be it's called the Dementor's kiss, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And he's just sort of like smiling at like the, I really hate it.
Right. I could take that interpretation. That's actually quite good because it's almost sort of like a, like, they call it a kiss, you know, a normally good thing, but when it's coming from a Dementor, it's like it sounds cute.
Yes.
It is not.
Right.
Okay.
Then the end of this paragraph, though, is when he's describing it. He says, I suppose there must be some sort of mouth under there because they clamp their jaws upon the mouth of the victim and suck out his soul, which I think is the first time in the series where that establishes a physical soul that a person has.
Yeah, which I think is like, you know, for the anatomy of a wizard, I think this is like a really, really big, a big deal, because I think it also helps set up a lot. Like, soul magic is highly important when you have the whole big picture. Like,
yeah. Everything with all the horcruxes and the tearing of one's soul and all that.
Yes, yeah. And the idea of keeping it like intact and sort of like what it means to your humanity, which basically is what Lupin does go on to then explain, which is that, like, you know, Harry's like, what, they kill? And Lupin's like, no, much worse than that. You can exist without your soul. Like, you know, as long as your brain and your heart are still working, but you'll have no sense of self anymore, no memory, no anything.
I know. It actually reminds me, fittingly, of the movie Soul, where you have like the land of like the lost souls.
Yes.
Which would like is a little bit different because like a Dementor didn't eat them. But like they show you like the guy on like Wall Street who's just sort of like sitting at his computer like with like lifeless, doesn't care about anything. And then they put the soul back in his body and he's like, food has flavor again, you know?
Yes. Yeah. Yep.
I was like, that's such a good representation. So like, good on Pixar for that.
But, no, definitely. Yeah. And I think it's a good comparison as well. Cause I mean, I think arguably, you know, that emphasis of the lost soul in the movie Soul is probably something to do with a layer of either, you know, I mean, it's almost what's being described exactly. It's like, you'll have no sense of self anymore, no memory, no anything. It's like, I mean, that can be depression, and Dementors are supposed to be physical manifestations of depression.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that fits together like rather well.
Yes. But so then we have just such an important conversation down here where where Lupin is finished telling him about the Dementor's kiss and told him that that's what Sirius is, what's going to happen to Sirius. And Harry says, he deserves it. And Lupin just sort of has a little food for thought and says, do you think so? Do you really think anyone deserves that? And yes, says Harry defiantly, for some things. And it's like, he wants to tell Lupin about all of it. So it's interesting here. Like, I feel like that one line from Lupin ends up being really, really important later on, because like Harry's gut reaction is like, get rid of him. Like, you know, he deserves it. Absolutely. But then when faced with the truth and having cornered Pettigrew, who is now guilty of the exact same crime and who they can bring, you know, kill right on the spot, he spares him instead.
He does.
Which, yep. To be fair, I suppose Harry does say, like, the Dementors can have him instead or whatever.
Sure.
But, like, he still spares him death.
He does still spare him death, yeah. And I do think that that's a good thing that, like, you know, I think what I highlighted, like, that he deserves it line and just said, like, Harry will go on to grow up so fast. Like, this is a rashness that I think is coming out of, like, an angry and frustrated 13-year-old.
Yeah.
But, like, the rate at which Harry, like, goes on to, I think, appreciate the importance of life and not killing, you know, I mean, it's by the end of this exact story, so...
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you're right. Like, it does happen. It does happen quick. It is very important. It's crucial to his character. And as we brought up on so many other occasions, I mean, this carries through all the way up until his final duel with Voldemort, who Harry could easily be intending to kill in the name of the greater good and is still aiming to spare him.
Yeah, still asks him to feel remorse, which, of course, he knows he won't, but he puts it out there.
Right.
I love too after this where Lupin or Harry hesitates to tell him all the story he heard about Black and the three broomsticks, but knew Lupin wouldn't be very impressed that he'd gone to Hogsmeade. But then I just highlighted that and was like, or would he?
I know. Yes. Yes.
Lupin later tells Harry, like, these map makers would have wanted to lure you out of the castle. They would have thought it very funny. And it was
yes.
So I think maybe he would have been impressed by it.
Yes.
That
yes.
you made a way there.
You found the map?
Yeah. Ha! What? You? Perfect.
This is working out so well.
It's working out so well. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Of course you did. Of course you did, Harry.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So then as we move forward, though, Harry does run into Professor McGonagall, almost physically runs into her. She was holding out his firebolt. It looked as magnificent as ever. And Harry says, I can have it back. Harry said weakly, seriously? And I wrote in more like, seriously.
More like that. Yeah. Right.
Seriously, because it's a serious black broom.
Yes.
Now McGonagall is back on Wood's marching orders and says, do try and win, won't you? Or we'll be out of the running for the 8th year in a row, as Professor Snape was so kind to remind me only last night.
What a jerk.
Can you imagine that conversation between Snape and McGonagall? Because I can't.
I can't, because I don't feel like he's like jovially having a nice rib, you know.
Oh, you're like at the water
cooler.
He's
not like, well, better hope you win, or you're not gonna, I don't want to say Slytherin's gonna win 8th year in a row, but,
right,
you know.
Right.
Like, you know he's being a real tool about it.
Yes, yeah. Yes. He's probably like, McGonagall, you haven't caught Draco Malfoy's wonderful passing out impersonation, have you?
Yeah.
That's my boy. He's going to win.
Yeah.
He's going to beat your boy.
Exactly. That's more likely what I was like.
Yeah, and then McGonagall just like hexes him on the moment.
Exactly.
On the spot. That's the thing. Is like, I can't imagine anybody talking crap to McGonagall, because I feel like she would just be so intimidating.
I know,
it's
right?
Like, yeah, who's getting away with that? Snape, you're a little too brave, I think.
Well, yeah. A little too big for your britches, there, my man.
But Dumbledore does think they soared a little too early.
Yeah, that's true.
That was a bravery reference.
Yes. Yeah. I got it.
Should Snape have been a Gryffindor?
No.
No. Yeah.
I don't think so at all.
Yeah.
Nope.
All right.
Let's see. And then she just says, "You've got a very good friend somewhere, Potter." Which, if you still think the broom came from Black, this is just foreshadowing, because in fact he does.
Yes. Yes.
Have
indeed.
A good friend somewhere. Let's see, moving on to the next page here, they get the broom back and, it says, you know what? We should make up with Hermione. She was only trying to help. And it's like, oh yeah. Yeah. Good call. Good call, boys.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good call.
We finally got there. Let's hope nothing interrupts that the next like 10 minutes.
Oh, I know. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So let's see. Then Neville sets up Sirius's next break-in over here, where he's trying to get into the Gryffindor Tower, and he's arguing with Sir Cadogan, who seems to be refusing them entrances. I wrote them all down, but I must have dropped them somewhere. And it's like, actually, he didn't. Crookshanks is the one who took this particular sheet of paper. This is all setting up Black's next attack. I love see what Cadogan says. Good evening, my fine young yeoman.
Yeoman, I think that's what it says. Yeah.
Yeah.
This whole like blip from Sir Cadogan, I'm kind of like, to be fair, he's kind of hilarious. You know, he's just like, a likely tale, roared Sir Duggan, then spotting Harry and Ron. Good evening, my fine young yeoman. Yeoman? Yeah. Come clap this loon in irons. Here's trying to force entry to the chambers within.
Right.
And I'm like, you're fun.
Yeah.
Like, silly, but fun.
Yeah. It's like, don't you must recognize the Gryffindors by now.
Yes. It's like, there's not that many of them.
Right. Yeah.
And this one in particular always has trouble.
Right. Come on. Kind of a break there.
Yep.
Anyway, the password is Odds Bodkins.
Yeah.
You always got to know for trivia.
Trivia. Yep. Don't even quiz me in the future on that one. You know, it's like, I won't have it.
Not going to get it. Not going to Wattlebird that one.
I don't know if is Wattlebird one of them?
Yeah, that was one of them.
Dang it. Have I already brought it up? If we already
that was
about
the one you asked people to ask you about.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Crap.
And several people did.
Yeah, and I didn't know.
You didn't know.
No. Anyway, okay.
Oh, well.
Yeah, so put me on the spot. Do it. Yeah, bring it.
Yeah, so Harry arrives into the Gryffindor common room, and everyone is excited because they know that he has gotten the firebolt back. So they all say, Ravenclaw, I have no chance. They're all in clean sweep sevens. Which, like, no wonder they lost to Slytherin. I mean,
seriously, yeah.
Yeah.
This is a funny one, though, because it would be an interesting way to know what brand broom Cho rides.
Yeah, this is important.
Like that's the detail. Like if it's like, what kind of broomstick is Cho on? It's like, it's a Clean Sweep 7.
Yeah.
It's also interesting because they're all on the same broom, and like the Gryffindors are not, but the Slytherins are. And so it's like, you almost have to wonder, is there like a person on the Ravenclaw team?
Oh yeah, like who's providing them?
Yeah, exactly. Like like, is it not uncommon for a parent of the team members who like to come in as like a sponsor?
Right, or like just some kind of like booster club or something.
Right. Yeah, something.
You'd think.
Otherwise, or is just everybody on Clean Sweep 7s, and then there's Harry on an international standard racing broom and the Slytherins on Nimbus 2001s.
Right.
And it's like, y'all, we can't do this.
I know.
He's so much faster.
It seems like cheating. And it also seems like there'd be different brooms per position. Almost.
That is also true. Yeah. Like it almost seems like a beater would have like a beefier kind of like more stabilizing kind of broom.
Right. Like, because it doesn't make sense to me even that like Harry's Firebolt, like I'm sure it is insanely fast, but like usually top speed doesn't pair well with like turning.
Sure. You know? Yeah.
Like, because you're moving too fast to turn quickly.
Right.
Like if you're a chaser, you probably want something that can move, that is like more maneuverable.
Kind of like a drifty car, like a Tokyo Drift style something or another.
And then I can imagine for a beater, you'd probably want like, or for a keeper, you'd probably want some sort of like wide brush on the back.
Okay.
To like cover more, like, because like you see Oliver whack the ball, the quaffle with the brush of his broom.
Yeah, so like goalie pads.
Right. And you'd imagine that beaters probably want like a little bit heavier brooms, then we swing the bat, they have like more stability to like whack the bludgers and stuff.
Okay, so I feel like at some point in time we can have a whole discussion if Quidditch broomsticks were cars, and then we'll assign cars that would fit with each of the necessary broomsticks.
There you go.
You like it?
I like it.
Okay, good deal. Yeah, we'll sort broomsticks into cars.
Yeah.
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 Okay. then as we go forward, let's see here. Ron is, I think Harry, Ron, and Hermione are about to be all good.
About to be all simpatico here.
Yes.
And Hermione says, I mean, at least you know it's safe, which is true. And then Ron offers to take the Firebolt upstairs to give, and plus he's got to give Scabbers his rat tonic, which I don't even know why you're bothering. It's clearly not working.
I know. Yeah. It's like at this point in time, it's been since September.
Yeah.
Ron. And it's like, I guess on one level, Ron might be like, well, he's still alive.
Yeah, that's true. We're still alive.
It's working.
Like, still, it seems worse, though, maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, maybe stop giving it to him and see what happens.
Yes.
Either way, it doesn't matter because it's just plot convenience. But I do feel like Harry has this line where he like asks to sit down next to Hermione. And it's just like one of those little moments where I feel like Ron, I feel like, is still being kind of like edgy towards her. And I almost feel like Harry is sitting down to be like, can we talk?
Right.
Yeah. So I just put like a little hashtag Hermione for life next to that. Yeah, one.
Hermione for life. No doubt.
No doubt.
And then, unfortunately, Ron's about to interrupt a conversation I would have liked to have heard the end of, where Hermione explains what arithmancy is at all.
Yeah.
Because she claims it's her favorite subject, but we'd never find out what it's like.
No.
I mean, we made a video once upon a time called like what like arithmancy explained, where it's sort of like adding up the numbers of like the letters and people's names and stuff and seeing how they fit together. Like I can't remember, it
closer to like divination to me.
Yeah. It's like a little bit like divination, but like more math based.
Yeah. It's like kind of tea leaf ish.
Yes.
But,
yes.
But different. But it's Hermione's favorite subject.
It's Hermione's favorite subject. Yeah. Which makes sense. I mean, it sounds like wizard math, and she's so logical.
Yes.
That kind of tracks. But then Ron, I feel like he kind of jumps to some big conclusions here. He comes screaming back down the stairs, screaming about Scabbers, look, Scabbers. But he doesn't actually have Scabbers. He just has a bloody sheet and several long ginger cat hairs on top of the sheet.
It looks bad.
I mean, it looks bad, but like if I couldn't find my pet rat who I don't keep in a cage in my dormitory, like, I don't know.
I mean, yeah, like, right.
Would I assume he's dead?
I have no idea. I mean, this feels like a sight to be seen, though. Like, I can only imagine that Ron is just earning massive cool points running through the middle of the common room with a bloody sheet full of cat hair. It's like, okay. I don't know what's going on up in their dormitory.
But anyway, basically what's happened is Peter Pettigrew has faked his death yet again. and framed Crookshanks for it.
Ah, yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Oh, man. The worst. When they find out this guy, they're just going to want to let the Dementors do whatever they will with him.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. Yes, but of course, Pettigrew has, I guess, fled Gryffindor Common Room and made it down to Hagrid's, where he'll be living until they get down there later in the book.
Yes, indeed. Yep. And I don't know. I mean, I guess at this point, maybe he just felt like Crookshanks was just getting a bit too suspicious, maybe?
I don't know. I think they say, I think he says later why he flees now.
Or is it, well, I was going to say, is it because of the Sirius Black break-in? But no, that was forever ago. So.
Yeah, and the second one hasn't happened quite yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So maybe just good timing on Peter's part.
I guess just good timing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, howdy.
Howdy indeed.
Unfortunately, though, this does mean that what was supposed to be a nice little reunion and making up between the Golden Trio, there's a bit more hostility left in the room.
It does mean that. So yeah. They are not friends. And I want to say the next sentence, if I flip over just one page, it looks like it was the end of Ron and Hermione's friendship. So it looks like Harry is sort of like, Ron, it's like just a rat. Like, you didn't even like him. Chill the F out, bro.
Yes, I feel like this is one where it's like Harry's a allegiance to Ron is winning out by like one fraction point, where it's like a 51-49 on like a teeter totter, and he's like, Ron was my first friend. We live in the same dormitory. He's like my pal, like, you know, but also right. I really like Hermione. She's cool and awesome and all of the rest. And it's like, I guess I'm siding with Ron on this one.
I know. It's like, I could agree with being mad about the firebolt, but
I'm not that invested in your rat, TBH.
You know what? If I'm being honest, don't care.
I haven't enjoyed living in the same bedroom as a rat for a while, if I'm being completely candid.
Also, if I'm looking at the rules here, it says owl, cat, or toad.
Yeah. This is contraband.
Contraband. Yeah. You've got cat food, Ron. You brought cat food to a cat place.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Cats are allowed. Rats aren't.
So who's really in the wrong?
Yep. Exactly.
Yeah. So. What was he good for? What was he gonna like turn into a person or something?
Let's just hope he doesn't return the Dark Lord. Okay.
Yeah. Let's just hope that. Yeah. You know, Ron, remember when you almost, I bet that's a great one. Remember when you didn't talk to me for a month because you were defending the Dark Lord's servant, Ron?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Hermione has some zingers right up her sleeve.
She does. She's like, how dare you argue with me ever? I will destroy you.
All right, Jay. Well, in the meantime, do we have a review?
I think we do have a review here, Ben.
Lay it on me.
This says, hey, brother, I love this podcast so much. I started listening about 2 weeks ago, so I'm only 9 episodes into Chamber of Secrets, but I'm catching up fast. It's so much fun. It makes me happy to have a podcast to listen to people who enjoy the series as much as I do. I have an idea. Does every Witcher Wizard go to the in-between/limbo/King's Cross station area, and that's where they have the choice to come back as a ghost or to go on, and Harry just happens to come back as a mortal because of his situation? So do you think everyone has like a limbo King's Cross situation if you're a wizard when you die?
It's a really interesting question, because I think like it seems like when Harry has the conversation with Nearly Headless Nick, you know, he's holding out hope that there is a scenario that Sirius may have come back as a ghost. And basically that would be like some comfort to Harry, because it would mean even as a ghost, he would still basically have the opportunity to communicate and learn from him and sort of have that familiarity. However, it also seems like what Nick is saying in this particular instance is that like the decision to become a ghost is permanent, for one thing. You never truly experience death, and instead you sort of like continue to live on this like feeble imitation of life.
Right.
In the meantime. And it, the thing that would confuse me the most about it is that like the zero was like temptation, because not everybody's going to have the same relationship with death, I don't think.
Yeah.
To the point where, like, you know, like Lily, for example, might be like, I want to come back and let people know what happened. Like,
right.
You know, my knowledge of what happened in my life would serve to be useful to people who are still out there. Like even that could be its own sacrifice. Like, I am choosing to return as a ghost because in doing so, like, I have unfinished business, you know, like,
right.
And that could help.
And that unfinished business is defeating Voldemort.
Precisely. So it's like, even in instances like that, if Lily were exposed to the situation where she is in her own version of King's Cross, which is not always King's Cross, but, if everybody goes through that moment, it would be so interesting to me how few people take the red pill, so to speak.
Right.
I don't know which would be the right one in this particular instance, but you know, like no, even people who like feared death, people who had unexpected death, people who would love to see their family one last time. Like the temptation seems so real.
It does seem extremely real. And it makes me wonder if it's the sort of thing, like if you're a wizard, if they like talk to you about this at some point and they're like, really don't choose ghost.
Right.
Like
you're warned against it.
Like you're warned against it or something. Like if that's part of the lessons at some point or not. But it does seem like you do have a choice at some point because there are ghosts.
Yes,
that
exactly.
That do choose it.
And that's the counter argument,
yeah.
Is that like there has to be a mechanism for this.
Yes, there has to be a point at which they choose. So I kind of feel like maybe yes.
Okay.
Like
okay.
That is maybe more like what's happening here, and that it's like, I guess Harry's is a little different because he's got like the tethering via Voldemort's like love crux or whatever,
right?
Back,
right.
Which is maybe like that's why he can come back like as a mortal person.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that sentiment for sure.
Yeah,
which nobody else would typically have.
Yeah, no one would ever normally have that. So the thing is, you're right, like something like this must happen because there are ghosts.
Okay,
like,
so
it is a choice you can make.
Do you think that there's a chance, okay, because the other thing that we could go off of here that I think is very interesting is Harry has Dumbledore inside of his limbo, which means
right.
They're like in limbo, Harry is given information that is seemingly coming from nowhere.
Right.
And Harry even asks the question, like, is this really happening or is this all just inside of my head?
Right.
And so, like, I almost wonder if there is somebody who would, because Dumbledore is the one who basically consults Harry to the tune of saying, like, you know, like he doesn't tell him, like, I think you need to go back. But I feel like the conversation yields that outcome.
Yeah.
And so I almost wonder if there is somebody who would come to you. And like somebody who you may have looked up to. So like, let's say for like Lily, like her parents would come.
Right.
And say like Lily might be like, but Harry, like he's back there. And they might be like, he is better off. Like,
right.
You know, like he will be okay. Someday he will be here, you know.
Right.
Like whatever. But like, I almost wonder if like there's like a consult, you know,
right.
Like Dumbledore, like somebody from the ether could come. To
I mean,
speak
it would make
you.
Sense. Why? Like it makes it like, you'd think more ghosts would be like a little crazier then, because it feels like someone would be like, look, you should come this way. Your soul will be at rest. You will be at peace. If you go back, if you choose ghost, your soul will never, ever be at rest.
Right.
You know, like
that would be enough to.
Yeah. Right. And it's just sort of like, right. I get it. Like, even if you feel like you have unfinished business, like death is a part of life. You understand that you've died. You know, like if you go back, you will never die. You'll never be at peace. Like the earth could explode. The heat death of the universe could happen and you'll still be there.
Right, right. You know? Yes, that's
like,
true. Yeah. Like
right.
At some point in time, the ghosts of Hogwarts are literally just existing in space dust.
Exactly. Like it's just space dust now and you're still there. Like this is, you're choosing eternal suffering, you know, by doing this.
Right.
In
right.
a way. So it's like, you'd think then the ghosts that still choose it would be very like they got a real bone to pick with somebody.
Right.
You know, which is why you'd think maybe they're like, you know, why like hauntings and stuff. But then you have, you know, people like Nearly Headless Nick, and he's just like, yes, I'm a perfectly reasonable gentleman.
Yeah.
With most of a neck. Or some of a neck.
Yeah, the Moaning Myrtle example I think makes the most sense.
Yeah, Moaning Myrtle makes more sense to me than Nearly Headless Nick.
Yeah, it's almost like a immaturity or something that's sort of like,
yes,
kind of
right.
Working its way through the mistiness of limbo.
Yeah, or even like the Grey Lady makes sense. She's like so mad at the Bloody Baron or whatever. She's like, I'm gonna go haunt you.
Right.
Or then the Bloody Baron is just sort of like, I don't deserve. you know.
Yeah, like it's kind of like a noble thing or something.
Right, right. His is, yeah, like I don't deserve to die. I will force myself to suffer because of how much I loved you or whatever. Like that sort of makes sense. But yeah, like Nick's doesn't make as much sense to me.
Maybe not. Maybe because like he needs to be quasi-rational. But I mean, he seems like he's got like his own weird insecurities, like even with the headless hunt and everything to do with that, like it's like he's like deeply bothered by his like lack of involvement. So I don't know, maybe he was someone who like wanted to garner importance of some kind,
right? Sure, because
he was even using magic on like the thing that he is sentenced to death for is I think for like growing tusks out of like a Muggle woman's face where he's like,
you're right,
trying to fix her teeth. So like, you know, if he's performing magic on Muggles, like you maybe you've almost got somebody who's like a Gilderoy Lockhart-ish sort of personality where it's like, I have magic. I can be impressive. I am going to go parade it in front of the Muggle people and that will make me important.
Right.
Because he is like Sir Nicholas
de Mimsey Polpington. Yes.
Yeah. So he has like
a knight.
Yeah, so yeah. He has like some layer of notoriety in the mortal realm. So I don't know, maybe that's like what he's chasing, but I do feel like that's like one of those instances where like Nick as a character needs to be useful. And like I don't really feel like the Gray Lady is as much of a conversationalist as Nick is.
Right.
You know, it seems like if you're in Ravenclaw, you're like looking over at the other house ghost being like, ours is a little blasé.
Right, yeah.
You know, like mm-hmm. She doesn't really seem to want to hang so much.
Not a lot of interaction. Fat Friar, you know, he seems like a fun guy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So anyway, okay, so that would be my thinking. I think you're right. I think that because you have to be given the choice, then, you know, Harry has the opportunity in the limbo to board a train because his version of it is King's Cross. But otherwise, I guess, like, even the decision Harry is making without the love crux maybe would even be his version of becoming a ghost. It just happens to be the case that he's tethered to the realm. So, like,
I think if Harry could, if he was just, because Harry knows, like, because they reason it out in King's Cross, and he's like, Voldemort took my mother's blood into himself.
Right.
Like, I think he knows if he goes back, he'll be a human again.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah.
But I think he's exiting through the same door that says ghost. It's just he has a special clause.
I agree. But, like, if not for the love crux, I don't think he chooses ghost.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah,
no, he just
dies.
No, I agree with you completely. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, absolutely. I think in that particular instance, like if you want to imagine the mechanics of the world and instead of it being King's Cross, it's just there's a door that says ghost and a door that says on.
You know, okay, this is a weird beef then.
Okay, lay it on me.
Nick says he has never really died, right?
Yes.
Right?
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
Myrtle's death is used for the diary.
Shouldn't have.
But she's never really died.
She's never really died. That's a weird one. That's going to have to be a thinker.
Oh, that is a thinker right there. My.
Was it not Myrtle's death?
Oh. But then who?
I mean, that's the problem. It's like, you know, I mean, it based on that, if that's the way in which we're going to interpret it, it would suggest that she had not properly died, which completely by the laws of ghost magic and therefore should not count. Oh my gosh. Can you imagine how frustrating that would be? Like trying to make the Horcrux and like you get like a 404 connection error.
Right.
And it's like,
sorry.
Yeah. It's like they decided to come back as a ghost. It's like, no, they didn't.
No.
Are you kidding me?
No. The murder. Why? Why? To haunt me?
Olive Hornby.
Oh, I'm going to kill her. Maybe it's Olive Hornby.
I love it.
Except she's not dead. So I don't know.
Do we know she's not dead?
How sad for Myrtle then.
That would stink.
I came back to haunt her, and then she was dead, and she didn't have the decency to become a ghost.
So I could bug her forever.
That'd be so funny.
That would be
not
really
funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there was only one death that year.
There was only one death that year. But now I'm wondering if he had the diary on him the whole time? Would he have had the diary on him the whole time? Or is it possible, would he have killed, like, the, who is it at Wool's Orphanage? Who is his,
Oh, the lady there?
The lady.
Interesting.
Like, could it, because we know he goes to, like, the Muggle bookshop.
Right.
To buy the diary.
To buy the diary. So, like, Vauxhall Road.
Vauxhall Road. Thank yes. you. Yeah. So, if he's back in London for some reason and he buys the diary.
Right.
Is Myrtle's death not the one he used? It's a weird question.
I mean,
we're basing it off a rather big clause here.
I suppose, like, the workaround could be that, like, his, like using Avada Kedavra rips your soul, even if,
like, intent to kill.
Yeah, like, intent to kill is what does it.
Right.
I meant to kill her, you know. But he also didn't use Avada Kedavra.
No, he didn't even do it.
The basilisk kills her.
The basilisk.
So
with the laser vision.
So it has to be more like about intent to kill.
Maybe.
With the laser vision.
With the laser vision.
What a weird. Oh, this is a real loophole.
It is a weird.
This is a weird problem.
We may have cracked the case wide open. Who was the person who left this review?
Oh, you know, Apple changed their. I didn't copy and paste it because Apple.
Oh, dear. Okay.
I had to, like, clip art it instead, or, like, screen cap it instead of copy and paste it because they updated the way you look at reviews.
Oh, wow.
Which is annoying. So I don't know. I'm sorry, whoever you are. This is a really good question that led us to an interesting answer.
I know. Yes. Yeah. So Air 5 to that person. Thank you for listening. You know who you are. I know you're only on, like, Chapter 9 of Chamber of Secrets, but when you get here, you're going to be like, what?
No!
They answered my question. They asked my question?
Yeah.
There we go. So anyway. There we go. Something to think about. Yeah, give us your thoughts. Be sure to let us know.
I know. Should Myrtle's death have counted if she came back as a ghost? Because ghost deaths don't count. Anyway, that is going to do it for us today. But make sure you join us next week. We'll be doing Chapter 13, Gryffindor versus Ravenclaw on Through the Gryffindor.
Today's episode was edited by Ethan Edgehill. Vaishon Brandon does our art. Catherine Stein is our production manager. And the show is hosted by me and Jonathan Carlin.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it, Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Through the Gryffindor is back, and this time we are heading to the West Coast. Join Jay and I as we record brand new episodes of the show live in person with you guys, plus a special in-person Jay versus Ben with questions asked by... This September, we will be heading to Seattle, Portland, Sacramento, Berkeley, San Diego, and Los Angeles. Seattle and San Diego were both sold out, but we've just added matinee shows to both locations, so if you missed out on the first pass, or if you want to join us for a doubleheader, we will have two unique shows in the same day. For us, there is nothing more fun than getting to nerd out Harry Potter style with each and every one of you, and we will also have exclusive Through the Gryffindor merch and a VIP meet and greet available for every show. We hope to see you all there. Ticket links can be found in the show notes or at supercarlinbrothers.com.